together. It's just an awful situation.
Well, he's such a gift, and he has spoken so highly of your work.
Well, thank you, and I'm so grateful. He's known about this now for several years, and he's watched me, and I've helped him with a couple of his books, and one that will be spectacular coming out about the adoration of the Holy Eucharist, and that is he had a bit of a tougher job. I only had to worry about America. He decided to do it since the time of Christ, and that takes a couple of years. But I can't wait to see the final product. But he has been such an enormous support for me, both morally, morale-wise, as well as also giving some incredible insights, which he uniquely has the ability to do.
Well, we look forward to being able to bring your work to our listeners. We're a large FM radio station, Catholic. A lot of folks are working hard to try to get the Catholic stations in other cities up, and unfortunately, right now they're on lower wattage AM. But the day is coming. Day is coming.
Good. That's wonderful. This book, by the way, does I love some of the wonderful stories and the lives of some of our great Catholic people and they're throughout this book, whether it's dealing with Bishop Sheen or it's the great mothers, Mother Cabrini, Mother Drexel, Mother Eaton. I was delighted, and of course, being a Catholic myself and coming at this, people have been saying, you know, there are all these bestseller books that are coming out by Protestants and that are very famous in the country, whether it's Rick Warren or it's Joel Osteen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm delighted to kind of be a Catholic author and to be able to promote One Nation Under God, because it certainly takes in not only Catholics, but certainly all of our country. And it's just it's a wonderful blessing for me to have been able to do this over 8 years and to be able to make this happen.
Well, anything that we can do to support you, we will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that enormously.
All right, Bruce, let's get started.
We're ready to roll. Sounds like we were rolling.
Well, yes.
Yeah, Father Groeschel will do that to you.
Yes.
All right. All right, everyone ready to go?
Okay.
All right, here we come. 3, 2, 1. Spirit 88.9 FM. We are Catholic radio for the Christian community. You're into Spirit Mornings with Bruce McGregor and
Chris McGregor.
And this morning we are delighted to have with us author James P. Moore, Jr., teaching at the McDonough School of Business at Georgetown University. He's a former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce, sits on a number of corporate and nonprofit boards, and has written and lectured widely on American prayer and spirituality, as well as subjects related to the world of business and corporate ethics. Folks, welcome to our show, James Moore. James, delighted to have you here. The book, One Nation Under God, The History of Prayer in America.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you this morning.
Well, and I got to ask the setup question. This is a wonderful book. It's a big read. It's a great read. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, you know, it's rather extraordinary. There is nothing in my background that would have ever given an indication that I would write this kind of book. But I had a wonderful career in government, teaching, and in the private sector, in the business world. But back in 1997, my father died very unexpectedly, and he and my brother had practiced medicine together in western Pennsylvania. And so I began the trek between Washington and near Pittsburgh pretty frequently. And on that first trip, I began to think about my father. I thought about prayer. I thought about how important our country was, how beautiful it was. And it was really from that I began to think to myself, you know, if prayer represents truly the most private, innermost thoughts of individuals, then it must say something about us as a people throughout our history. And I thought, I want to be able to grab the books that have been written, the articles that have been written on this subject, because I'm sure they're wonderful. And I was surprised to find that nothing like it had ever been written.
Mm-hmm.
So I very easily and quietly started to put it together, and that became the genesis of an 8-year odyssey that allowed me to produce this, which is going to be turned now into a film, audio production, music CDs. It's become quite a cottage industry already.
It is. I'm just going to say this for our audience, James, that this is the gift book this year.
Amen.
For all those folks who've gone out and bought the history books on the lives of former presidents or on other issues or anything like that, this book is such a fantastic read. You really do cover the history of America, but also the history of prayer in America, and you bring to life all of the characters from that history.
Oh, you're wonderful to say that. And you know, one of the things, and this did not really hit me until I came close to finishing this book, but it became so obvious all of a sudden, and that is that if it had not been for prayer, that literally the spiritual, religious, cultural, political, and even economic and military history of the United States would be far different than what it is today. And if you believe that the United States has had an impact on world affairs, then it has to be said that American prayer has had its own effect on world history. And so that is quite an extraordinary thing to be able to say. And even an agnostic, even an atheist, in reading this book, I think, would have to come to that conclusion that prayer has been a part of America's DNA with, in no uncertain terms.
As a basic understanding, what is it in its purest form? What is prayer?
I think prayer, first of all, is elevating our own lives and in our communication with God. The ability to be able to not only communicate with God, but also to be able to put our own lives in perspective. I often find that it's not so much the prayer that tries to somehow change God's mind as much as it is to be able to realize that we are able to be changed. I love the notion, for example, and have made this comparison, that when the great composer Mozart was once asked what his favorite note was, he said, it's the rests, because without the rests, all those notes wouldn't make any sense at all. It would all be jumbled. And so it is with prayer. We need the ability to be able to step back, to talk to God, to be able to really understand where we are in the cosmos of things. And so I think that that this book and the experiences of individuals as well as our country as a whole really do speak to how important prayer is.
You point out very clearly that the United States, of course, doesn't have a monopoly on prayer.
Right.
But it has developed its own prayer culture, and it's something born out of several things.
That's absolutely true. I think, you know, we get very concerned, as we should, about the crass commercialism and so much that transpires that's a bit on the dark side in our culture. But we cannot forget the fact that we are truly a very, very spiritual people. By the polls that are taken by the Gallup Organization or the Pew Foundation, we're able to find that a very large majority of the American people pray on a daily basis. And so we are far more spiritual than any single developed country in the world, including our neighbors to the north, Canada. And so I think part of that is because of, for example, the separation of church and state. While I get very concerned about the fact that prayer too often is made a subset of church and state issues when I think it should be treated all by itself, the fact is that having that separation of church and state really has added to a vitality in our religious and spiritual culture here in the United States. And I think that's helped a great deal, making prayer a very vibrant part of our lives.
You even point out that, and we've seen this in the news, that geneticists have seemed to have identified a gene in us that requires us, in a way, in a very simplistic way of saying it, to pray.
Yeah, there are those who believe that we just may be hardwired for computer geeks as far as prayer is concerned. But I think it is a fundamental part of us as individuals, as human beings. When you think about it, when men and women were created and they looked around themselves and said, who was responsible for this? I certainly wasn't. That mystery, that curiosity led them to reach out through prayer. So that prayer far predates organized religion, organized faiths, organized churches. And it became the common denominator by which we as a family, as an American family, were able to come together at Washington Cathedral and at Yankee Stadium in the aftermath of September the 11th. You know, when you think about our country at during the days of great European exploration, the one thing that Native Americans had in common with European Americans, with African Americans, and that was prayer. They developed their own prayer cultures in so many different ways, but there was this need to be able to reach out to God that allowed for these very diverse groups to understand that they did share one thing certainly in common, and that was prayer.
The thing about your book, it's just not an esoteric talk or a theology about prayer as much as you really take the lives. That's why it's such a wonderful read. You take so many, countless. I don't even know, do you have a number of all the different people that you talked about in this book? My goodness.
I'm not sure, notwithstanding an encyclopedia, that index probably has the most diverse and group of people that have ever been put together in one cover.
Oh.
But you know, it's amazing. One of the things that I also was so excited about that gives even greater life to the book, and that was the audio recording that was done with Random House. And although I became the general narrator of it, there's an extraordinary excerpt about from Senator John McCain in the book talking about how important prayer was to him and his fellow prisoners of war in enduring the camps in Vietnam. And so I was fortunate and I was able to get Senator John McCain to read that, and I also got him to be George Patton and Harry Truman and even Stonewall Jackson. And then I was able to get former astronaut Frank Borman to read the first prayer that was ever transmitted from space to Earth, which he delivered back at Christmas of 1968. I was able to have Ben Vereen, that wonderful musical actor, mm-hmm. Sing the spirituals of the slaves. And I had the chaplains of the House and the Senate read the prayers that they delivered the day after September the 11th. And so we brought together 20 extraordinary individuals to give voice to George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and to Mother Seton and Emily Dickinson. I mean, it's a wonderful composite. But again, I think we, you know, saints and sinners, the newly arrived, the born and the bred, the famous, the not so famous, all of us pray. And to be able to really take a mirror and allow us to see our reflection, our spiritual reflection in that mirror, I think has been a wonderful thing for me to explore and probe and ultimately produce in this project.
What's magnificent also is that you show us that prayer is more than words, in an essence that you take a look at poetry. You even talk about the section on Martha Graham, has her dance is her prayer.
Yes, it's rather extraordinary. You know, we had the national unveiling of this project, of the book, just two nights ago. There were 3,000 people gathered together with 200 performers, and it was held at Washington National Cathedral, which was a perfect place to be able to unveil a book of this kind.
Mm-hmm.
There was a wonderful troupe, dance troupe, from St. Teresa of Avila Church in the poor section of Washington, the Anacostia section of Washington, who actually presented a dance that was absolutely exquisite. There was music, of course, behind it. There really were no words that were spoken. But when you watched their movements, you realized how devoted they were in that expression in trying to communicate with God. It was absolutely beautiful.
All right, James, we're going to take a very quick break here. And we'll continue our fascinating discussion of your book, One Nation Under God, The History of Prayer in America. You're listening to Spirit, 88.9 FM, Catholic Radio for the Christian community. Don't go away. Okay, they've been ordered to stay.
Okay. Okay.
That you two are married.
Yes,
oh,
we
yes,
are.
22 years.
Yeah, we're...
You work and you live together.
How about that? All that practice paid off.
One house under God.
Yeah, really?
That sounds pretty good to me, too, though.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Ready, Bruce?
I'm all set. Here we come again in 3, 2, 1. Spirit, 88.9 FM, Catholic Radio for the Christian community. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bruce McGregor. She is...
Chris McGregor.
Collectively, that makes us the McGregors, and we are talking with James Moore, Jr. this morning, author of the book One Nation Under God, The History of Prayer in America.
The thing that I loved in the book also was that you provided what you called the tangible evidence that almost every piece of American life was established with a trust in God.
Yeah, absolutely, and it becomes so ridiculous, you know, these days when we hear of people wanting to take in God we trust off of the currency, take the words under God out of the Pledge of Allegiance. The fact is that it is very much a prayer, and our notion of our relationship with God has been so much a part of our heritage that it becomes a silly exercise, but at times a serious exercise because we have to deal with all this in the courts and elsewhere, But it's not going to go away, and I'm delighted that even over the years you can continue to chart this prayerful course that we've taken, and I believe that truly we are still as vibrant a prayer culture as we've ever been.
I think I was born in 1961, and so when growing up, it was right before the Engle versus Vitale case that really changed our discourse on prayer.
It certainly did, and that was pretty dramatic stuff. There had certainly been some concerns that were raised in the days before that court decision, but that certainly put down the gauntlet. But it is, I think that we are going to have to continue to deal with the realities of that. But that's the great problem. Truly, when you put prayer as a subset of church and state, then you're always going to have those kinds of problems. That's why I think it is so important that we talk about prayer on its own merits, that really it cannot simply be seen as a simple part of established churches. One of the things that I'm absolutely delighted by, this book will be made into a film for public television.
Good.
Thanks to a wonderful grant, a multi-million-dollar grant from the Templeton Foundation. But not only is it going to be on public television, but I'm so excited by this. There will be a 5-part program that will be video streamed into every public, private, and parochial school in the country to be able to talk about how important the life of prayer has been to America. And so whereas you cannot stand up in a classroom and say a prayer, we are legally going to be able to talk about how important prayer has been in American life. So there's a nice way of being able to get in this matter of prayer into the classroom.
Now, you're sure the ACLU isn't going to try and interfere with that?
No, you know, fortunately, we have done all those traps so far, and I think we'll be
great.
Fine.
All right. Well, God's looking out for you.
You betcha.
Well, the reason I dated myself on this by giving my birthday is only because...
She's a youngster.
Well, there's never been a time where it hasn't been, it seems to me, an issue. But as you point out, before 1962, rarely did it rise as a topic of serious national debate to talk about public prayer.
You're absolutely right. But you know, it's interesting because in about 1845, we had a very serious incident. And in fact, Earl Warren, who was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court at the time of the Engle-Vitale decision, referred to it. And that was that in Philadelphia, Catholics got very, very upset that in public schools, they were being forced to pray, but they were being forced to pray the King James Version of the Bible, so that when the Lord's Prayer was being uttered, it was definitely the Protestant version rather than the Catholic version. They really refused to do that, and it created a series of riots that led to the killing of several individuals. But I think we need to make sure that when we talk about prayer, that there is the ability for us to be able to come up with a prayer that allows us really to understand one another, be sensitive to the faiths of others around us, and not to take away from what divides us. Prayer ultimately should have the effect of uniting rather than dividing us. And if we lose sight of that, I'm afraid we're losing sight of a very important part of our lives.
We were talking to Seamus Hansen of the Beckett Fund the other day. And when we look at the different clauses, or different ways of approaching this, you can either have one state religion, or you can, as we're trying to do now, is try to deny all religions, or the alternative can be to open it up that all religions can be expressed.
You know, it is so tough. I mean, to reduce America to pure vanilla certainly smacks in the face of what our founding fathers wanted us to see.
Right.
We've replaced the Cold War with a period in our lives of religious terrorism. And so I think we need to be very sensitive to the prayers of others. And I must tell you, despite the fact that I have been deeply, consider myself to be a faithful Catholic and have been all my life, I have found that going through this 8-year odyssey that it has only deepened my faith. And that when I listen and have listened to the prayers of others who don't necessarily share my faith, listening to their adjectives, their adverbs as they reach out to God, that it has dilated rather than diluted my own Catholic faith.
Mm-hmm.
I'm delighted by the spirituality of a number of people, and it has really only strengthened my Catholicism, and I have found that there are those who have been delighted to learn about my faith and have... enjoyed the opportunity to listen to my adjectives and adverbs as well.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating when you put in the section as a response to all that action in the early 60s by the court of anthropologist Margaret Mead and even psychiatrist Carl Menninger, who both pretty much were despairing that we have lost even what they considered prayer rituals.
Yes, in fact, Margaret Mead, that great anthropologist, really made it clear that we need to have those kinds of customs and rites in our society to really anchor ourselves in our society. That if we don't have prayer, if we don't have the wonderful rituals of prayer, that we lose ourselves in the midst of all this. Carl Menninger, the great psychiatrist, he went a step further in talking about the fact that we need to be able to have prayer to be able to live up to our failings as human beings, and that if we do not acknowledge our problems and the fact that we are guilty of certain trespasses and ask for forgiveness, that psychologically, individually, we have some very serious problems in the rest of our lives, and that prayer does give us the chance to be able to confront God, to be able to be penitential and to say, God, I'm sorry for what I've done, and try to make recompense for our transgressions. And so prayer really has the ability. I, for example, with our Catholic faith, I've got to tell you, I am absolutely convinced that Christ has saved so many Catholics millions of dollars in psychiatric fees by having provided us with the sacrament of penance.
Amen.
The notion of being able to go into a confessional, to be able to confess your sins and to walk out knowing that after you've said a few prayers that you have been forgiven, I mean, that is a wonderful, wonderful gift that allows us to be able to get it on with life.
When you track back to that, I keep going back to that time in the 60s where it seemed as though a major paradigm shift occurred, that there were politicians who were trying to rally and to try to deal with that First Amendment clause, that whole idea of prayer it being available to Americans.
Yes.
In a public manner, but there wasn't a grassroots effort. There wasn't a groundswell by the public to support it. That it would be 40 years later, as resulting in the election of 2004,
mm-hmm.
that all of a sudden now the sleeping giant is beginning to awaken, or people are beginning to say enough is enough. We do need to do something, and now we have to try to get the politicians to do something.
You're absolutely right. There are some historians who believe, and I think that this is probably absolutely true, that we are going through what is known as the Fourth Great Awakening. We have had several great awakenings in our history, even before the Republic was formed, and that we are going through this revitalization, this rebirth of our spiritual and religious consciousness. And I think that all of this is really and truly going to come to a head. But it is, again, it is important. I think we get so much into the political correctness of our legalism that we should not be looking at prayer as a subset of religion and church. And quite frankly, our founding fathers were absolutely committed to prayer in the very first days of their getting together in September of 1774 in taking on the British. Prayer was foremost in their thoughts, which led them every single day that they were in session to begin that session in prayer. We cannot forget prayer.
Right.
Oh, who can forget the Congress after 9/11, standing on the steps, united, singing "God Bless America"?
Absolutely, and that was such a powerful moment, and an interesting poignant moment as well was when there were concerns as to whether the words "under God" would be taken out of the Pledge of Allegiance. When all of a sudden, Democrats, Republicans, liberals, and conservatives alike said the Pledge of Allegiance with special emphasis under God on Capitol Hill that
right.
day. So that's it. At least it shows that we have something to start with. We just need to get it going and to make sure that we don't forget our roots. That's what's important about this book. This book talks about our past, our present, and even our future by focusing on some young people and how prayer is such an integral part of their lives. And I think that we need to always put these things in perspective. And prayer is going to be with us until the end of this republic, that's for sure.
The influence that your book is going to have over the next year or two, especially in this debate, and probably even much longer after that, is going to be absolutely wonderful to watch, because I think it's going to be a very important part of that awakening.
Well, you're You're very kind. Thank you so much. And you know, I have said, and others who know me well will agree, I could care less whether my name is on this book. Anonymous would do just fine. I think that this is an extraordinary treasure chest that I have been blessed to have been able to put together with incredible jewels, incredible gems, and I'm delighted that now I'm able to lift the lid and allow so many people to realize this extraordinary heritage of ours when it comes to prayer.
One of your most enthusiastic supporters is someone that we admire greatly and our audience loves, is Father Benedict Groeschel.
Yes.
It's almost as good as having an imprimatur.
Well, he is a wonderful, wonderful individual. I'm going to be with him this weekend, and he has been an extraordinary inspiration for literally several years. He's watched me go through the struggles. There have been times when I've picked up the telephone to ask a question here or there. You know, it's interesting. There have been times when this was a very complex book to put together. I literally turned to, I estimate, well over 30,000 sources to be able to put this one book.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I read it. I believe it.
You think, and putting these pieces of the puzzle together, I was telling Father along the way that I often found, and I normally go to Mass about a half an hour before Mass begins, and I would sit at critical moments in the writing of this book, and I would be praying, and I would be thinking to myself, now, how do I make this work? How do I go from this chapter to that chapter? And all of a sudden, the idea would come to me, and I would figure it all out. And this happens so